Hello. Ari Rosenbaum seems to be joined by Dan Venturi for another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's episode, we're going to talk about ERISA 404c plans. The stuff that, you know, really that plan sponsors and even a lot of the advisors don't really know about some of the caveats dealing with participant-directed plans that can really blow up in everybody's face. But we'll be with Dan in just about a second. And we're back with Dan Venturi. Dan, how was your week this week?
It was good. Good. It was freaking freezing here. You know that, on Monday and Sunday night and Monday. So that was fun. got to go see, I saw Billy Joel last night. That was awesome as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I told you about that. I mean, to me, to see him in Madison Square Garden, to me, felt like I was in his living room or his den.
Yeah. He was super comfortable and out of nowhere, right? So I guess this mashup thing is like a new thing. Jimmy Buffett does it a lot, where you bring in another song in the middle of yours.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so he did Eagles' Take It Easy, right, for one of them. And I forgot the song that he brought it in on. But it made total sense because him and Don Henley are good friends. But on, I think it was the last song of the night, or the second to last song of the night, he cuts into a Zeppelin song out of nowhere. It was awesome. It was a really, really cool show.
No, I mean, it's great. Where'd you sit?
136 on the side.
Okay.
So it was good seats, courtesy of Sony Music. So thank you, Sony, for hooking us up. But he had the rotating piano.
Yeah.
Right? So he's constantly gyrating
right
from side to side. So, you know, each side of the arena got to see him. But it was a great show.
Now, I told you the time I went, I went to the Madison Club seats. And
yes,
Madison Club seats, I mean, I love it, but I didn't know until then that the Madison Club, where they have the all-you-can-eat food and they had a sushi bar and all that for a Knicks-Clippers game, they don't have it if it's not a Knicks-Rangers game. So I ended up with, like, no food. So I'm there with my wife, and I'm like, oh, we're going to get these great tickets, we're going to eat, and of course there's no food. I walk down the suite level, because that's where it is, and all of a sudden there's a Lexus event with Walt Frazier and Earl the Pearl Monroe, and I crash it, and of course, since it was Madison Square Garden, I'm a big Mitchell Ness fanatic. I was wearing my Bernard King jersey, and all of a sudden, Earl Pearl's like, oh, who's that, Bernard King? I'm like, yeah, and I said to Walt, you know, Walt, had I known you'd been here, I would have worn your jersey, but, you know, it was great. I mean, we're talking about probably 3-4 years ago already, or probably even longer. And, you know, it's a concert that you could go to every single month, and there'll be something different. I mean, I think one time Joe Perry was on. So he always, you know, there's always somebody to come on board and play. And what it's just it's a great experience. So I recommend anybody who, you know, I know he's doing the stadium thing, but I think Madison Square Garden's great. The acoustics are fantastic. I love what they did with the renovation. And, you know, it's a great show. I mean, he does New Year's Eve at Nassau Coliseum, but, you know, Madison Square Garden, you can't beat it.
Yeah, it's an amazing building. if anybody out there hasn't been, go. I mean, it's up there with, you know, Wrigley Field and Fenway Park, the old Yankee Stadium. It's just one of those iconic venues. You're blown away by it. And then the fact that it's in the heart of Manhattan, also, it just kind of boggles your mind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and for Long Island, it's actually easier to get to than the one at the arena in Brooklyn, actually, the way I find it. You know, you get a better connection into Penn than you do into Atlantic.
Yes, sir.
Terminal, so, yeah, so that was great. What do I have to announce? Well, my fun thing of the week, to show you what a nut job I am, at noon, the Mets put up their game against the Tigers in May, and that is Robinson Cano Star Wars bobblehead night. And these tickets are with the Seven Line Army, so I'm going to be sitting in center field over there. And for $50, I got you know, you get a free shirt that comes with it, and you sit with all these crazy Met fans. So that's
so. Was it the bobblehead?
The bobblehead's the draw to me. Yeah, the bobblehead's a draw. One of these days, I'll show you a video of all the bobbleheads I have from like stadium giveaways. Like I actually have like bobbleheads from other stadiums that I loved on eBay that I had to have. So, you know, when the Boston Red Sox had the Mensch on a Bench Jewish Heritage bobblehead night, I had to get it. And I have an Oakland A's Jewish Heritage Night bobblehead. I have a Washington Nationals Davey Johnson bobblehead and an Oakland A's Catfish Hunter bobblehead. It's so crazy that I actually have, and you know how much I hate the Islanders, I actually have, not too long ago, they actually had an Islanders Billy Joel bobblehead night. So I actually have a Billy Joel Islanders bobblehead.
There's bobblehead. The more we peel the onion, Ari, the stranger it gets.
Exactly. You know, it is what it is. But speaking of events, just booked Colorado, Coors Field, Denver, Colorado. We'll be there June the 14th. That's a Friday night. That night also, we'll, you know, for people who want to go, we'll have tickets for a game against the San Diego Padres. We still have, of course, the event in L.A. I still got maybe a couple of sponsorships left. People are signing up, which is really, really nice. St. Pete, we got the conference for advisors on March 7th and the planned sponsor event on March the 8th. 7th is going to be Lou Piniella as our guest. March 8th is going to be Wade Boggs. We still got the event April 12th in Atlanta, May the 3rd in Kansas City. And we're looking at places and, you know, we'll see what happens. I think Cleveland's going to be for September. I always wanted to go to Cleveland. You know, let's face it, it's where I want to go. But also when we have interest from the planned sponsors and that the venue, you know, venue is reasonable in cost. You know, I looked at Phoenix not too long ago and you know, the prices was crazy. And Fenway, I want to do Fenway, but I think we might have to settle for Foxborough, which, you know, when it comes to the scheme of things, isn't really much of a settling the way the Patriots are going. So yeah, we'll see how it goes for the end of the year, but we've booked the first events through June. So that's a lot of fun. Go to bet41ksite.com for further information and to sign up and buy tickets and all that jazz. So anyway, we're about eight minutes in already, and let's talk about our subject for this week. Really dealing with ERISA 404C participant-directed plans. What really most plan sponsors and quite honestly a few plan providers still don't know about ERISA 404C. I used to always call it a double-edged sword about it. It was great with it's great marketing and execution and results may be a little shocking for the people involved. So let's dive in and talk about ERISA 404C. I grew up, started in the ERISA business, late 90s, as I call it, the go-go 90s, when it really was big, stock market, you know, you had 30, 40% returns, you know, you had your hot funds. I remember when, you know, Seligman Communication Fund was a big deal, and any of those internet funds, and Janus had these great Janus 20, and Janus Enterprise, and Janus Mercury, and of course, they were all holding the same damn assets, every fund. But anyway, American Century, Legg Mason, whatever. We had these great funds. Everybody was making money in the stock market. And there was a big push, primarily prior to the late 90s, a good chunk of 401k plans were trustee-directed, where the trustees directed the investment election. But there was a push for participant-directed investments because, you know, technology was catching up to really allow participants to direct investments, change their investments every day. When I started out, we didn't even the company that I was with was actually two TPAs that had merged maybe a year before I joined. And one of them was a balance forward type TPA where they didn't have a daily value product and one that did. So the offices merged. We all moved to Long Island. And there was really a push to turn these trustee-directed plans and make them participant-directed plans because of what was going on with the market, what was going on in technology. And something that I thought was something like the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, where there were magic beans, you know, the whole story of Jack buying magic beans. And I think the way that participant-directed plans were pushed, I think there were magic beans involved there. The idea that, you know, the gimmick was if you have participants direct their own investments, they are going to be exempt from liability. The plan sponsor is going to be exempt from liability for any losses sustained by the plan participants on any losses they had. And of course, that was at a time when nobody lost. The only people who ever lost in the late 90s were people who put in all their money in a money market fund. Those are the only losers. Everybody was winning. Some were winning more than others. And really, they didn't understand what ERISA 404C was all about. And, you know, let's look at ERISA 404C. It's really an exception to ERISA, and it's a limited exemption. It basically applies to 401k plans, 403b plans, anywhere where participants can direct investments of their own accounts. And under that provision, fiduciaries would not be liable for any claim over a breach related to losses sustained by a participant for the selection of plan investments. It could be gains. I mean, theoretically, but nobody's going to, no participant's going to sue you for any money they make. But the problem is that with ERISA 404C, it's only part of the story. And ERISA 404C isn't this really blanket liability protection. And I think that the problem is that most plan sponsors weren't aware of it. So I've dominated too much of the conversation for the last 3 or 4 minutes. What do you say, Dan? You there? But, okay, you're not there. But anyway, ERISA 404C is, you know, really not an all or nothing, you know, blanket of protection.
Sorry about that, Ari. I had to...
No, it's not a problem.
Something. That's apologize.
Not a problem. I was just going over the idea that, you know, I think too many plan sponsors were told that, you know, ERISA 404C was this great protection, this great warranty. But they don't really realize that it's not an all or nothing proposition. Just the fact that you have participant direction doesn't mean that, you know, you're fully exempt from liability.
Correct. And I mean, at least my understanding is there are a couple of things that you have to do, right, to get that
right
protection, right? It's not just participant-directed.
Right. You know, that protection isn't some sort of – I used to always call it like a suicide pact. It's really a sliding level or scale of protection depending on what the plan fiduciary does. Is it all or nothing? So if the plan fiduciary does some part of – what they should be doing on the 404C, they will get some sort of protection, but it's not going to be absolute. They still could be on the hook because they didn't fully follow the process. And I always point it out, and I'll explain why I always point it out, because there's always, you know, when I carry a grudge, I'll say why I carry a grudge. But anyway, I've always told the story. When I was an associate at a law firm, we had the human resources director pull me aside and said, oh, you know, you're an ERISA expert. The managing attorney says that we should talk about the 401k plan. Can you take a look at the 401k plan and see what's going on? I said, sure, why not? And, of course, what happened was is that looking at the investment lineup, so this is going back to, you know, losing track of time, but 2008 I joined the firm. I was there from 08 to 10. And I'm looking at the lineup. And I'm looking at these funds. I'm like, my God, these are some old funds. These were really popular funds back in the day when, you know, the stock market was booming. What's going on? So I asked the HR director, do you have an advisor on the plan? And the answer was no, they didn't. And I said, okay. And I said, who picked out these investments? And she's like, oh, the ERISA partner who left the firm. They spun off to start their own ERISA-type firm in Suffolk County. And I said, okay. And she says, oh, he picked out the funds like, you know, 10 years ago. And I said, yeah, well it shows. And, you know, I told her, you know, you got to get an investment advisor. You will have absolutely no protection if a plan participant ever wanted to sue you for any losses sustained by them under ERISA 404C. All she did was you had the stale fund lineup, and she'd give you the Morningstar profiles of the funds and said, you know, good luck to you and the SPD, and that's it. And I kept on telling her, you know, you got to wake up. This is you're putting the plan at risk. She was a trustee of the plan, and I guess she panicked because, you know, she obviously wasn't doing her job as the HR director. And they had a TPA that was really not into the daily 401k plan business, but I guess they were. And so I said, okay, talk to my friend, you know, at Fidelity. And she talked to a friend at Fidelity, and he told her, you know, yeah, you should get advisor. So Pat, the HR director, says, okay, Ari, do you know any of these advisors? I said, okay, here's like three or four people I trust. So she talks to them, and inadvertently, unbeknownst to me, the guy from Fidelity, a friend of mine, gave her the name of a financial advisor, a very well-known financial advisor. And of course, since I recommended some people, she picked the advisor that the Fidelity guy recommended. I wasn't told about it until it was actually done. Well, you know, God forbid you should talk to the person who actually knows a thing or two about 401k plans. So they picked the advisor. The advisor's great, I thought she's great. I mean, you know, if you ask her, she'll tell you. But she's somebody who's very well known and has won awards. That was my Don Rickles line. You know, but anyway, I meet the advisor. Great advisor, very good dealing with education, all that kind of stuff. And she pulls me aside and she says, you know what? I'm not in favor of changing the record keeper or the TPA just for the sake of changing the TPA. So I said, okay, great. And of course, I find out later, right before I'm leaving to start my own practice, they switched providers and never told me. And they went to an insurance company provider, which I wasn't a big fan of. And they didn't go to Fidelity. They went to this insurance company platform, and I always would joke later with the guy from Fidelity, see what you did? You recommended this woman. I couldn't get my guy in, and as a result, you didn't get any of the business. So I always keep on mentioning that story if you ever see my writings and keep on bringing it up, and, you know, that's why, because of that story. But that's just part of it. So there is no magic beans when dealing with ERISA 404C. You know, they were pushing it. All the mutual fund companies were pushing it. You know, and you know why. It's all about distribution. If you have a trustee-directed plan, you know, it's possible that you don't have any mutual fund investments in there. Daily 401k plans means, you know, you're really pretty much going to have mutual funds in there. So, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, in my opinion, that these plans – started offering mutual funds. That, you know, in my opinion, that's really what was done. It was a great mechanism to distribute assets. So it wasn't really surprising that thanks to you know, the daily value 401k plans pushing that, you know, mutual funds were really the investment being used for these daily 401k plans. And, you know, Dan, you know, like you said, there really is a process that's got to be put in place, and that's something that we've always talked about on this podcast, about what really needs to be done. And that's why, you know, I hate to throw it out and bash Pat again, but I've been doing that for like the last, I think it's going to be 9 years already, goofing about Pat. She didn't take too kindly to me. For many years, my allergist was in the same building as that old law firm. And there was one time Pat saw me in the elevator. I would not talk to her. She would not talk to me. And the look on her face, she obviously had been reading my articles.
Way to make friends, Ari.
I'm very good at that, you know. It's something I always tell my wife. I bring out the best in people.
So, yeah, there's a former colleague of mine at the consulting firm I used to work with. He was a private equity sales guy. And one of his favorite lines when he was talking about retirement plans was related to 404C. You know, so he'd ask the plan sponsor if they knew what it was and if they were 404C compliant. And, you know, when they had this puzzled look on their face, he'd basically tell them that they were screwed and they really needed our help.
Right.
And, you know, he won a few plans that way.
No, it's a great way because they forget that ERISA 404C is a safe harbor. And if you don't meet the requirements, you don't get all that kind of protection. You know, the Pat story, the end of the story with that law firm is many years ago, I was at a going to go to a plant. It was a event sponsored by some of these insurance company providers and a TPA out in Melville. And I get a call. It's an accountant, and he says, "Oh, you know, I have this client here, or I know this plan sponsor that, you know, for some reason it's a Safe Harbor plan, but they owe like $100,000 in contributions." I'm like, "Whoa, how's that possible? It's a Safe Harbor plan. I mean, as long as they're making contribution, what's going on?" And they said, "Oh, you know, they had a problem with their provider." And of course I said, "Oh, sure, I'd love to help." And, you know, he throws out the name of that law firm that I used to work at. And I started laughing. I said, yeah, I worked there, this and that. Anyway, one of the partners of the firm, Pat was the HR director, and the other lawyer, one of the partners, was the other trustee. And he calls me up, and I'm like, "Jack, you don't remember who I am?" And he's like, "No, I don't." I said, "Okay, well, I used to work, you know, at your firm." And he says, "Okay, whatever, but you were recommended." I said, "Okay, I'll come in." You know, whatever. I didn't expect in a million years they'd actually invite me over. I mean, I've been trashing them for like the last 9 years. But anyway, sets up the appointment. And then maybe a couple days later says, we can't make it. Pat is unavailable. We'll have to reschedule. And of course, it never was rescheduled.
Shocking.
Now listen, you know what? You say something. You know, there's a price to pay for having a big mouth, you know? That's why they don't invite me to, you know, on any of the big, 401k events anymore. That's why I had to start my own. But, that's a joke.
That was kind of a good thing, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it's a joke, too. I don't know if that's...
You made some lemonade out of those lemons.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
One of my favorite, I guess it's somewhat timely, maybe a little belatedly, but one of my favorite, MLK books, and I'm kind of paraphrasing it, but having the courage of your convictions. And to your point, I mean, when you have an opinion and you express it, occasionally there's a consequence.
Yeah, I can't stand people who don't understand that. You know what? That's the price of admission for having a big mouth. You know, you could, you know, many years ago, I was dealing with a advisory firm in California, and they hired me over a very well-known ERISA attorney. And the reason was they hired me was my articles, and number two, the well-known ERISA attorney who they were talking to was busy at some expensive bundled provider. The ERISA attorney for this extremely expensive bundle provider, and the advisor says, "Oh, that really nailed it for me." So that's why I went with you.
That one worked out.
Exactly. Again, ERISA 404C requires a process in place. And really, to qualify for it, plan sponsors have to comply with the core requirements for investment selection, plan administration, and plan and investment disclosures before they're going to be exempt from fiduciary liability for any losses that these participants are going to sustain. And, you know, one major requirement is that the plan has to offer a broad range of investment options, which is one of the easiest things to satisfy. You know, broad range, you know, 3 to 5 funds that are broad range. I mean, you know, add a balanced fund and a large cap, add a small cap, you're pretty much there.
Yeah.
And the very funniest part of that ERISA 404C, which will probably be the topic of another podcast, is that fiduciary warranty a lot of the providers out there used to give to plan participants, plan sponsors, I mean, with that great selling point. A lot of the bundled providers did it. They said, you know, "We're going to protect you. We're going to offer you this fiduciary warranty. We're going to offer you an investment lineup, and we'll protect you against any claims that you fail to satisfy the broad range of investment requirement." And, of course, any monkey can pick out a lineup. And when I mean monkey, I mean a real monkey or a chicken. If you give them a selection of 9,000 funds and you tell the monkey or chicken to pick like 5 funds, I guarantee you the chicken or the monkey will make that broad range requirement and satisfy it. So that's why I used to joke about the fiduciary warranty, how worthless it really was, because no plan sponsor gets sued for that. Unless your only investment is a money market or stable value fund, you'll be fine. You'll win. You'll satisfy it. So, it's at least three investment alternatives at broad range. I always say 3 to 5, but it's three. It's got to be diversified, offer risk-return characteristics different from the others, and offer diversification. So, you know, everybody satisfies that. And, you know, the big crux of it, plan participants got to be informed about what the investments are. So as long as they have, some knowledge as to what investments to pick. And with apologies to my friend Pat, giving them a bunch of Morningstar profiles isn't that. You know, you got to give them some, you know, investment education. If you can satisfy the investment advice regs, that's probably a good thing for plan sponsors to get through. But, you know, they got to get enough information to make informed investment decisions.
I guess may elaborate a little bit more on what that would sort of look like. Do you have to have annual meetings with an advisor, you know, annual participant meetings? Do you have to, I mean, how, it's one of those things where if it was actually enforced, I think the vast majority of plans out there would have, you know, a serious challenge in satisfying it. How much education is required? What's the right amount? Does it matter how it's disseminated? Does it have to be more than once a year? Put some lines around that for us.
Yeah, to me, I think you got to meet at least twice a year with the plan participants. Have a education meeting. It could be online now. You know, you could Skype it and do a WebEx. Doesn't have to be live and in person. But you want to have something in place. And most importantly, for the plan sponsor, you want to document it all. You know, years ago I said, oh, you know, why don't you have an attendance list of the people who showed up at these meetings? And a lot of plan sponsors are like, wow, that's actually a really good idea. You want to document everything that you're doing. So it's, you know, to me it's have the meetings, document that you had the meetings, document what you gave out to plan participants, make sure who was there. And of course, you know, bring your providers in, especially the advisor, to help with the enrollment and the education part of it. And again, keep all these records. You know, you could always scan it and keep it online or whatever it is, but keep records of all your meetings, document everything. And the more you document and the more you follow the process, the more liability protection you're going to get for any participant losses. And the problem was is that, you know, when you visit plan sponsors, most of them don't do anything. They don't have meetings. You know, they don't really do a good job with, again, with apologies to Pat. You know, prior to me getting involved, they never actually had meetings. So when I signed up for the plan, it was immediate eligibility. I just looked at the Morningstar profile and filled out my investments, and that was it. So you got to do more than nothing. Unfortunately, too many plan sponsors are doing nothing. And, you know, in an ideal world, you got to, you know, make sure that you're offering something. Again, I like advice, but you may not have a provider that can offer it. You know, you really have to make sure, you know, based on looking at these Department of Labor guidance, they've done interpretive bulletins, and they've, you know, really encouraged plan sponsors to offer investment education. And of course, with the regulations, they're pushing now, obviously, for more advice. But the biggest kicker to me is the problem what I see with investment selection. And again, we see it all the time. You know, I used to joke that, you know, a lot of plan sponsors, if you wanted to see what funds were popular 10 years ago, look to a general reading of most plan sponsor fund lineups. It's like a museum. You know, if you look at, you know, what's the biggest holdings of 401k plans now, they would notice that these are like some of the larger funds. And some funds that were really popular 4, 5, 10 years ago. So, you know, that's that. You know, and yeah.
Go back in a second to advice. What exactly do you mean? Are you talking about models? Are you talking about, you know, having access to a financial direct access to the financial advisor. The reason I'm asking is twofold. One, those things usually have costs associated sure. with them. And secondly, you know, there needs to be some sort of, I guess, I don't want to say ease, but some sort of ability to deliver it without having to move heaven and earth, I guess. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, the investment advice regs that they put out a few years back, and, you know, there's been, you know, a change. Obviously, the fiduciary rule is dead now as we speak. But you have RIAs who do offer it. And investment advice, what is it? It's sitting down with a participant, looking at their lot in life, and then telling them which investments to pick, as opposed to investment education, which really is, this is a balance fund. This is a large cap fund. This is a small cap fund. You need to be well diversified. Dollar cost averaging, these broad investment concepts that are not tailored specifically for each individual participant. It's like a one size fits all basic tenets of plan investing. You know, investing for 401k for dummies, if they still had a book like that. You know, that sort of thing. If you don't have a advisor who offers advice because you're working with a broker or you're working with an RIA who doesn't offer investment advice, you could pick an online provider that'll do that. You know, obviously there's going to be a cost per month or per head or whatever it is. But, you know, studies have shown that, you know, participants who get investment advice do better than those who don't. And so there's obviously, a trade more costs you more, but it's obviously going to cost you less in liability exposure because participants who make money in their plans and do better than those who don't, you know, are less likely to sue. So, you know, the problem I find with ERISA 404C is that fund lineup where they had an advisor who hasn't done their job or they may not have an advisor and you have a old investment lineup of funds that really just are dogs now when they were, you know, they were thoroughbred horses when they started, but now they're, you know, they're like Old Yeller now.
It didn't end well for Old Yeller.
Yeah, it didn't. I used to remember when they used to show that on network TV. That's how old I am. It was like on a Sunday night they would show that movie. Didn't cry when they shot Old Yeller. I didn't understand why they had to shoot a dog, but then again, at the time I first saw it, I didn't understand the whole thing with rabies. But anyway, you really need to sit down, you know, as a plan sponsor and sit down with the advisor, go over there, review the funds, whatever your port you're using, see which funds need to be replaced, see what fits the guidelines set forth by the IPS. But, you know, as my wife would say, do something. You know, you can't just sit on your rear end and do nothing like Pat did before I came along. I'm sorry, Pat. But she's not going to listen to this anyway. And she might be retired for all I know. But anyway, you know, it's important to do that. And it's important that, you know, you got to give that information to plan participants. Again, something more than a Morningstar profile. And you gotta go through the whole entire process. And again, document everything. Make sure you have everything. Make sure it was followed, and make sure it's kept, and that you have good records. You know, that's the problem. You know, that's really the problem. You have to do that. So, I think that you know, I think we've killed this subject, but. You know, it's important that plan providers and plan sponsors understand that just because participants direct their own investment doesn't mean that the plan sponsor isn't out of harm's way for any losses. And, you know, look, it's a relevant topic because, look, my wife just got her 401k statement and, you know, she saw that she lost, you know, like 15%. So, you know, it's a big to-do. And it's something that, especially now with the market the way it is these days, it's something that, you know, plan sponsors need to follow and make sure that they actually have a process in place. That's really it.
Process. That's the big nutshell here. We talk. You said it earlier. We talk about process all the time. This is no different.
Process and documenting. You know, It's like I used to play golf. I used to take golf lessons before I had kids. You know, once you have kids, that kind of kills that. But I had a great golf instructor. And, you know, he used to show me, you know, I was a big fan of Callaway clubs. And he would show me a club and he says, this is just a tool. It's really how you utilize that tool. And that's the same thing with, you know, ERISA 404C. It's a great tool to use for plan sponsors to limit their liability. But if they don't use it correctly, it's of no use. Just like that Callaway club. You know, you could buy a cheaper club off the rack, and it does the same job if you still have the same crappy swing. And that's the same thing with you know, ERISA 404C. If you're a plan sponsor, you're not going to do your job, or if you're a plan provider and you're not going to help the plan sponsor out, it doesn't matter whether it was trustee-directed or ERISA 404C plan participant-directed. You're still going to be on the hook for liability. So I think I'll leave it at that, you know? You got to eat, you know, it's like George Costanza. You got to leave on a good note, you know? Always leave when, you know, when they're wanting more, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's it, I guess, for this week. There will always be a next week. So, again, go back to that 401kside.com. Look at the events that we got online. Check me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and all that for the other events that have been announced. And you know, if you're a plan provider and you want to sponsor, these are fun events. Gets great exposure. And like I said, it's a lot of fun. You know, we're a few weeks from L.A., and we're certainly looking forward to that because it's Dodger Stadium, it's L.A., it's warm weather, and it's Steve Garvey. So that's
it. Get out there, guys. It'll be a great time.
Okay. Same podcast channel. Talk to you guys later. Take care.
Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Wake up, kid. It's 10:30. The youth ain't nothing really changing but the dates. You a grand slammer, but you know Babe Ruth. You gotta learn how to relate. I'll be swinging from the pearly gate. I got all the answers, and lo and behold, you got the right key, baby, but the wrong key. Ho, yo. Yeah.